Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Came on us so fast, there's hardly a facet of our lives, be it education, government, any kind of activity in the public sphere. It goes down to our grade school children, a law being considered in Missouri that would have this kind of gender. It's not just gender equality. It flies under the flag of equality. It's actually the elimination of any kind of distinction between male and female, all the way down to the kindergarten classroom. And bathrooms are not the only problem here. In fact, they may just be a symptom of a far greater problem. The attempt to eliminate the differences between male and female, how did it find its way into virtually every aspect of American life and so quickly? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking with Ashley McGuire, author of the book Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female, about that very subject on this Tuesday afternoon. And Pastor Tom Baker joins us in about 40 minutes. We'll be talking with him about Jesus healing a blind man in John chapter 9, teaching that Sunday school lesson for you. Joining us to talk about the elimination of differences between male and female, or at least the attempt to do so, Ashley McGuire. She's written for numerous publications, including the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, the Washington Post, and Time Magazine. And she's author of the new book, Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female. Ashley, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me on.
For those who are waging this war against the natural distinction between male and female, who want to see that distinction blurred or eliminated, for them, what do they think is at stake?
Well, I think for them, I think there's two sort of threads to that agenda. One of them, I think, is actually a genuine, well-meaning quest for equality between the sexes. And I think in their minds, equality is achieved through sameness. That if we can make the sexes identical, we will have achieved equality, and that the differences between men and women are the source of iniquity. I think there's another thread going on to really sort of completely sever our ties to nature. And that, I think, is a more problematic thing. One, because it can't be achieved, but two, because I think we only see more pain and suffering when people try to completely disconnect themselves really from reality.
You use that word reality, and there have been many who have characterized this, the gender war, so to speak, as a war on reality. And I think it was recently Pope Francis even talked about it, a global war on family. It's much more, isn't it, than simply a philosophical attempt or even a metaphysical attempt to redefine the sexes.
Oh, sure. And I think, you know, the better part of my book is actually a documentation of the real life consequences of denying reality, whether it's, you know, I think colleges are a particularly acute example where you see administrators saying, no problem, we're going to put men and women under the same roof, tell them that any sexual morality is Victorian and old-fashioned, and add alcohol into the mix, and then wonder why it is that there's a rampant problem with sexual assault against women. That's just one example. And another really powerful example, I think, is has to do with the issue of women in the military, where, you know, I think there's certainly a lot of women in the military who are serving their country wonderfully, and there are certainly many, many roles where women are well suited and maybe better suited than men to serve in those roles. But the idea that we're going to put them into combat roles where they're going to be going up against enemies like ISIS. I mean, the Marines did a study on this to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, and the findings were devastating. They found that mixed-sex units performed worse on every single readiness metric, and that women were something like six times more likely to be injured or die. And so, you know, what I think this shows is that treating the sexes equally, like in a sex-blind way, actually leads to very unequal outcomes, and the burden falls most heavily on women.
So first, let's distinguish or attempt to at least define in a way that's relevant to our discussion two terms, sex and gender. How would you go about that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been doing a lot of interviews on this book, and I've come to find a very simple way to talk about the difference between sex and gender. And that is that sex means something and gender doesn't. Sex has a very plain medical, biological definition. It is whether or not someone is male or female, and that is defined by one's genitalia and chromosomes. Gender, on the other hand, I mean, you won't find one clean definition of gender. People are trying to define gender in many different ways. I think, you know, in the medical community, you'll see gender talked about as sort of the cultural factors, the cultural manifestation of our maleness and femaleness. I think a good example would be, you know, in some cultures, men wear dresses or skirts, in others, they don't. You know, they wear pantsuits. Things like clothing, roles, you know, in Saudi Arabia, women can't drive, whereas they can in other countries, things like that. These are sort of the more superficial ways we see gender play or sex playing out. But the reality is that's still tied back to sex. But what you're increasingly seeing is an attempt to completely replace the concept or the definition of sex with gender, which basically renders everything meaningless.
So we're writing laws. We're changing policies, both big and small. We are, in effect, redirecting both legally and socially our society based upon a term, gender, that doesn't have a clear and agreed upon definition.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, again, I go into this at length, how this starts to play out into it moves from the abstract to the concrete very quickly. Another good example would be the issue of sports. I talk about how girls' sports was established when Title IX came out, which prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex. Now, the intent of the law was to actually treat girls differently. In other words, to create opportunities for them that didn't exist before. And if those opportunities, you know, if a school couldn't find enough girls to make a, say, lacrosse team, they actually had to allow the girl to play on the boys' team. But what you're seeing now, when people are saying sex doesn't mean anything, or we cannot make any distinction between the sexes, you're actually starting to see boys, high school boys, compete on girls' teams. I mean, I just this week read about I don't know if this is high school, but it's a boy who's competing in girls' wrestling and beating them, of course, because he has a biological advantage. So absolutely, when we start writing laws and using the word gender, which doesn't mean anything, what you end up doing is actually undoing important protections for girls and women.
What in the world, if gender is that ill-defined, what is gender theory?
Well, that's another good question. And, you know, I think even people who would call themselves gender theorists would disagree amongst themselves as to what that means. There's, you know, if gender doesn't mean anything, then it's a theory, a meaningless theory or a theory without definition. I think another good example of this is what Facebook tried to do. Facebook, a year or two ago, decided to move away from simply offering people the choice of male or female on their profiles, and I think offered something like 70 different gender options, which sounds laughable, like sounds like a lot. But within months, they were forced to basically back away from that and offer instead just a fill-in-the-blank, which I think now it's male, female, or other, because so many people said their gender wasn't represented. So, you know, I think at the crux of gender theory is this idea that really started in the sexual revolution in the 60s and 70s, which was this notion that our maleness and femaleness are socialized. They're constructs, they're arbitrary labels with these arbitrary physical manifestations that we can free ourselves from.
What has this done to kind of ordinary garden variety privacy. I'm not talking about a complicated legal definition of privacy. I'm just talking about the kind of privacy that people come to expect in public spaces or in college campuses or things like that.
Well, you know, I think what I tell people is if you want to see where this issue is going, I think college campuses are about 10 years ahead of us. Now you have something like 90% of college dorms are co-ed. Many of them co-ed by floor, many by hall, many by bathroom, some by shower. And increasingly we're seeing colleges, I think the number is 38 or 39, colleges now have offer co-ed dorm rooms. This is official campus housing, not off-campus housing. And so, you know, when I went to college 10 years ago, there was one campus option for women, and it was a woman-only dorm. But even that, I mean, men were still allowed in. You know, there was times when there were men in my bathroom. And so I think, and then at the same time, the school I went to had a horrible problem with sexual assault that's only seems to have gotten worse. I know people debate about just how bad the sexual assault issue is, but nobody would deny that it's a problem on college campuses. And most of these sexual assaults, something like 75% of them, are happening in campus housing, in these dorm rooms. So I think there are immediate implications for privacy, because as soon as you make the argument that there's no difference between men and women, then why can't men and women be in each other's private spaces? And pretty soon you wind up in a place where you're saying it's actually discriminatory not to allow either, you know, anyone into any space. And, you know, suddenly you reach the point where women are being accused of being discriminators for not wanting men in their private spaces. And I give the example of Harvard University, which last year told students they would be punished if they participated in single-sex clubs, which was essentially a de facto ban on single-sex clubs. And it was the women by the hundreds who marched through campus saying, "You're taking away our safe spaces," and many of these were women who had been sexually assaulted on campus.
Ashley McGuire is author of the new book, Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female. We're talking about attempts to eliminate the differences between male and female. When we come back, do the administrators of these educational institutions connect the dots when it comes to their policies on gender and sex and sexual assault on campus?
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When a Christian woman is critical of her own flesh, she holds her Creator in contempt.
Rose Adel from her new book, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Our Heavenly Father knit us together in the womb. He did not do a bad job. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139:14. That goes for everyone, including the one who thinks she's the ugliest of them all.
You can purchase and download Concordia Publishing House's new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically, at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith in a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about attempts to eliminate the differences between men and women. Ashley McGuire is our guest, author of the new book, Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female. Ashley, before the break, you were talking about it is an epidemic of sexual assault on campuses, all of which are attempting to eliminate the difference between male and female. Do the administrators at these educational institutions, do they connect the dots between their gender policies and sexual assault on campus?
No. In fact, that's what's so amazing is not only do they not see it, but I think they are enabling the ideas that are fueling the epidemic. Because it is, you know, women's studies, gender studies departments that for decades have been fueling this idea that gender is a construct, sex is an arbitrary label. And, you know, so they've been teaching these students this. And, you know, actually, I document in the book the way that now these universities are basically putting out like an entire new language, a new set of pronouns that students are supposed to use that are completely grammatically, I mean, they're invented pronouns. And even, you know, even writing centers, which are supposed to be the vanguard of grammatical correctness, are encouraging things like use of the word they, the plural they, to refer to a singular person who claims not to have a particular gender identity. So you have universities themselves sort of upending grammar and sort of these last bastions of logic and reason and truth, and then wondering why it is that they can't do it. I mean, they've tied their own hands when it comes to tackling this problem. And another example that I give is, I think it was Mount Holyoke College wound up being forced to cancel the vagina monologues. You know, this is another sort of controversial thing, but at least its intent is to raise awareness about sexual assault against women. And they were forced to cancel it because it didn't include women, biological women, on the stage. So you now have schools not even able to, you know, host performances meant to raise awareness about violence against women, because the universities themselves have been teaching that the idea of being a woman is a made-up construct.
These students go from university to workplace. So how have those ideas filtered from, as you said, the universities are a decade ahead of us, how are they filtering into the workplace and wreaking havoc there?
Well, that's a really good point, and I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right that, you know, especially some of these elite institutions where, you know, ironically, the problems are sometimes the worst. I mean, I document how some of these elite schools like Yale are the ones that have Title IX lawsuits against them for creating environments that are hostile to women. But you're right that these are the people who are going on and graduating and entering into corporate America, and then you see, you know, one of the biggest corporations in America, Target, stepping right into this debate. You know, this is a family store where people like moms like me go to buy laundry detergent and onesies for babies. And suddenly, you know, it becomes like a political decision whether or not to go there, whether or not I'm going to be buying gender-neutral clothes, whether or not the toys are going to be categorized in gender-neutral ways. And so I think very much this is filtering into consumerism. And, you know, I think these corporations are under pressure to go with the flow, the gender-neutral flow, you know, even when there's costs to women and even when it's not what their own consumers want. You know, I think if you were to do a straw poll of, you know, regular American parents, they're not going to tell you they're particularly concerned that, you know, the Thomas the Train blankets are in one spot and the, you know, strawberry shortcake blankets are in another. I mean, these aren't the things that average Americans are worried about. In fact, if anything, I think most parents, if you look at, say, the popularity of the gender reveal party, are actually more and more celebrating. We're seeing parents celebrate the sex of their children, and that's a good and a natural thing.
You had mentioned earlier attempts, very expensive attempts on the part of the U.S. Marines to see what happens when there's not only forced equality, but forced interaction in combat units with disastrous results. Talk more generally about the social experiment that has become our military in general on the issues of sex and gender.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it. Our military really has become sort of a cesspool of social engineering, and it's unfair to the men and women in our military. You know, I think the military really sums up how, when you approach the issue of equality between the sexes with stamping out the difference as the path to that equality, you're going to see women shortchanged. And so, and also, I think the military really highlights another point I make in the book, which is that actually what you end up doing when you're trying to make things gender neutral is you wind up defaulting to the male model as the ideal. So the, you know, the idea that physical macho strength is the ideal in the military is, I think, very much what's driving this notion that women can only be fully equal to men in the military if they're fighting in combat roles. I mean, that just sort of assumes that you can't contribute on par with a man unless you're delivering hand-to-hand blows. When in fact, when I did interviews with people in the military, they said, actually, you know, where women are often stronger than men is on intelligence issues, that, you know, they have a more sort of horizontal approach to things. They see the bigger picture in a way that men don't. So why isn't the military sort of stepping back and looking and seeing, okay, we know men on average are physically stronger than women, and we know women, you know, have a very sort of different type of intelligence. How can we use their strengths in a way that protects the integrity of both, especially the safety of women, and makes the military better, stronger, more ready? But instead, what you're seeing is, you know, the Navy now telling women they can no longer wear their skirts to graduation. I think I just read that by 2018, all the women in the Navy now will have to wear the male uniform. So what you're instead seeing is women in the military sort of be absorbed into this male paradigm, and I think it's unfair to women, and it makes the women less safe. I mean, their approach actually makes women less likely to serve their country without being sexually assaulted or injured.
When these things are done in the military has a pretty vital and narrow role in our society and in the world. It's a function of protection and of defense, and in some cases of offense. You had mentioned earlier the effectiveness. What have we discovered about how effective a fully, not only fully integrated, but now women in combat supporting military is going to be?
Well, I mean, the one thing that I really looked at was a study that the Marines did that found, and this was just, you know, one segment of the military, but that found that when you mix sexes in units that are designed for combat, the units do worse overall on all metrics. And so, you know, that may be uniquely the case for combat roles, but, I mean, the problem you see with the overall approach is that now they're, you know, for example, boot camp, that used, women and men used to train separately for the Marines, and for good reason. I mean, I quote one former Marine who talks about the fact that, you know, much of boot camp is essentially like being harassed. You know, somebody's yelling in your face, shoving you, and, you know, suddenly when you're doing that with the sexes mixed, I mean, anything could be construed as sexual harassment. And so you're sort of introducing that variable to things. Now the Marines, I believe, are talking about putting men and women in tents together overnight, which gets to the sort of college example. We've been down that road. We know what happens when you put men and women under the same sleeping quarters, especially under less than ideal circumstances, whether it's, you know, the stress of war or alcohol. It just doesn't work out well. Women always get the short end of the stick. And so, you know, again, I think the approach the military is taking only reinforces the idea that the sex-blind approach does not serve women any better. It does not achieve the equality that, you know, it claims to be seeking.
Did we cross a, for lack of a better word, psychological threshold as a society when we decided to integrate women into combat?
Well, you know, I think we had already crossed that point. I mean, I think that happened at the same time that we were hearing, you know, that it's child abuse for an obstetrician to identify a newborn by their sex, and at the same time that we're hearing, you know, people should use the locker room or restroom of their choice, essentially, or, you know, the Boys and Girl Scouts now saying that a child's birth certificate is not a sufficient reference point to determine whether they can participate in that social organization. So I think it was one of many indicators that we had reached a point where at least sort of top decision makers in our society were throwing the last vestiges of common sense and reason to the wind.
We'll talk about the throwing of common sense and reason to the wind after a recent royal birth announcement with Ashley McGuire, author of the book Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female. After this, I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You could even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. Performancefitness618.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about attempts to eliminate the differences between men and women with Ashley McGuire, author of the new book, Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female. Ashley, what can we learn from the recent reaction to the birth announcement of the royal baby from the royals William and Kate?
Well, you know, I give an example that I think is satirical of somebody, I think it was on Reddit, who said, you know, how dare the royal couple, this was in regards to their second child, who's a girl, Charlotte, how dare the royal couple identify their child as a girl? You know, that's not a decision a person can make till he or she or Z or Zer is old enough. And I think it's a 90% chance it was a facetious sort of tongue-in-cheek post. But at the same time, you read things like that that are not facetious all the time. And I give the example on my of a friend of mine who went to college with me, who actually claimed in seriousness that she was offended when somebody asked her when she was pregnant if she was having a boy or a girl, because, to quote her, she said, "A fetus can't have a gender." And so, you know, you have on the one hand, like, educated people like that saying statements like that seriously, which, I mean, on the one, it's sort of funny because it is sort of correct. A fetus can't have a gender because gender is a meaningless construct. But a fetus does absolutely have a sex, and that sex is determined at the moment of conception. And it underscores a sort of irony about all of this, because this is all happening at the same time that we hear this societal obsession with science, and that, you know, this group is science denying, this group is denying science, whether it's related to vaccines or climate change. And here we have something that is as plain as day, that, you know, as sure as the sun will rise, that from the moment a person is conceived, they are conceived as either male or female. I mean, even if you want to get biblical, you know, in the beginning, he created them, male and female, he created them. We're sort of, this issue is getting at the very crux of the most essential, earliest aspect of our identity. And I think that the royal couple example was, you know, a comical way that this issue came up, but at the same time, a little bit dark, because, I mean, people are making these arguments in seriousness, too.
You talk about the sexual revolution. You say build this progress for women is actually just a Ponzi scheme for the patriarchy. What are you saying there?
Well, you know, I'm using a little bit of alliteration there, but I do very much believe that the sexual revolution, which is what I think was a trigger point that has led us to where we are today, because that's when you first started to hear the argument that gender is a social construct, and it was feminists who pushed it. Feminists who were arguing that the idea of male and female was a power construct created by the patriarchy to keep women down. But what I argue is that here we are 5 decades later, and all that's changed when it comes to human sexuality has been to empower men over women. You see the rampant sexualization of not just women now, but girls. You see this actually promoted aggressively by Hollywood, aggressively by corporate America, aggressively even by the pharmaceutical and medical communities, who, you know, want to put things like Plan B and birth control over the counter so that, you know, literally 10, 11, 12-year-old girls can walk in and buy it, arguing for the legalization of prostitution, even as we see human trafficking continue to be one of the greatest forms of human slavery for girls and women. And just even, I talk about college campuses and how even at the most elite of these institutions, you see educated women actually selling themselves for sex to pay for their tuition and justifying it through things that they've learned in their women's studies department. So I very much think that the sexual revolution did more to infinitely empower men over women when it comes to sexuality.
Where does abortion on demand fit into that?
Well, I think that's a huge part of it. And I think, you know, those who advocate for abortion argue that it's the ultimate sort of, well, first of all, it's the ultimate way to separate, you know, your life from reality. Although at the same time, I mean, it is a reality. It's still something a woman goes through that she lives with for the rest of her life. But what it actually does, I think it's another example of holding up the male body as the paradigm. You know, the male body doesn't get pregnant. And if women can just make their bodies like men, you know, they may not be able to completely make it so that they never get pregnant, but as long as when they do, and they didn't intend to, they can, you know, rid themselves of the consequences, if you will, then they will have achieved equality. But ironically, what that does is yet again underline or underscore the idea that we're looking at the male body as the ideal. And it's been a way that men can use women for sex and then drop them when they're not interested in the consequences. I mean, it's made fatherhood a social choice for men. And the reality is that it's still not a social choice for women. It's a reality for women, whether they choose to have an abortion and live with that pain the rest of their lives, or become like one of the four in 10 households in America that are run by single mothers, which is something feminists are now celebrating because, again, getting back to the idea that, you know, we achieve equality with men if we do what they do. So now because they're doing what men have done for centuries by being the breadwinners, they're somehow, this is a moment of triumph for women. And so I think it's very much highlights the way that these ideas have given men more power over women at great cost to women.
In American government, things are often institutionalized by, well, just the simple flow of money. You've written recently for The Hill on defunding Planned Parenthood. Why is not only that a good idea, but also why does it have the support of many, many women?
Well, sure. You know, almost half of women in America self-identify as pro-life. I think they see Planned Parenthood as a corporation driven by its bottom line. And the way they drive their bottom line is by abortion. And they do that without care or concern for the emotional needs of women. They lie to the public about being an organization that funds women's health. I mean, the latest sting found them, and I lost track watching the video of the number of health of their centers that admitted they don't provide any prenatal care, when we have hundreds of centers all around the country that actually do provide prenatal care, that give women choice, that give women options other than going through the horror of abortion. But, you know, above all, I think women are just sick of the identity politics that Planned Parenthood is driving, that, you know, the only way to be a feminist is to be pro-choice, which cuts out half of American women who have a different idea of what it means to be a pro-woman or a feminist, starting with the fact that not all of us agree that, you know, the slaughter of innocent children and violence, I mean, abortion is a violent act against women, is somehow an essential part of empowering women in a free society.
Finally, then, Ashley, someone listening to us says, I've seen this with college kids coming home from school, I've watched it take place in public spaces, public policy, government, all these kinds of things. This intentional and well-organized attempt to blur the distinctions and eliminate distinctions between male and female looks to me like insanity. Question for you is this insanity temporary or permanent in American society?
I think it's temporary because I think you can only hide from or deny reality and truth for so long before it catches up to you, before the consequences hit you in the face. And I think we're very much at that point. I think you see backlashes that I document, you know, on all these different fronts, whether it's 1 million parents signing a letter against Target saying, you know, we're not going to shop here anymore because we don't need to have our shopping experience politicized, or whether it's parents showing up in droves at school board meetings saying, no way are you going to be requiring us to keep our kids in a class where you're teaching kindergartners that gender is a fluid spectrum, or whether it's women on the campus of Harvard and other schools marching in protest when the schools try to take away the last remaining single-sex safe spaces for women, whether it's women protesting the idea of being forced to register for the military draft just because that's what elites say makes us equal with men. So I think we're reaching the point where the backlash is rising up, and I think if you look, you'll see that that is very much driven by women.
Ashley McGuire has written for numerous publications, including the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, the Washington Post, and Time Magazine. She's authored the new book, Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female. When you purchase Sex Scandal using the Amazon link at our website, a portion of your purchase will benefit the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for Sex Scandal by Ashley McGuire. Ashley, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Tom Baker will be with us on the other side of the break, teaching a Sunday school lesson, Jesus Healing a Blind Man in John chapter 9. Stay tuned. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused.
Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a confessional Lutheran. The clcc.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama. And Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.